And turn to Luke chapter 21. Luke 21. This is the part of this text that Jesus was telling his apostles. And we find out from Mark that he's telling his core four, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, this separate from the other eight. And this part is where he's telling about the destruction of Jerusalem. So he starts in verse 20, and Jesus continues saying, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near." So he's telling to the people that 40 years from now, they would be very wise to have listened to and remembered these words and heeded these words. This is a warning that Jesus is giving the future Christians that will be 40 years into the future. And so he told them, "For you Christians that are living in Jerusalem, whenever you see the armies surround Jerusalem, then you know that the desolation is near." Kaufman's comment on this passage is, he entitled this, "The Sign and What Shall Follow the Sign." So the sign was to be the encirclement of Jerusalem with hostile armies. This was a sign no one could miss, and when it came, they were expected to utter desolation of the city. They were to expect utter desolation of the city. So the army will completely destroy the city. So this is a warning that Jesus is giving the future people to get out when the army surrounds the city. Kaufman continues, "There is nothing in this passage that is not also in Matthew, who mentioned the armies that would burn the city." And of course, that was Matthew 22, verse 7, that we just covered with the parable of the wedding feast. "And the desolation that would follow," Jesus mentioned that desolation in Matthew 24, 15, which is the parallel account to Luke's account here. "And it is certain that Matthew accurately quoted Jesus' words, which were spoken 40 years prior to their fulfillment. Matthew and Mark, in the parallel accounts, use the words, 'the abomination of desolation,' both of them being Jews, but Luke, the Gentile, while using desolation, selected another word that Jesus used in the discourse, which was armies. That Jesus did indeed use that word is seen in the fact that when the armies of Rome surrounded Jerusalem, all of the Christians fled to Pella." And we get this from the historian Eusebius, who lived either 200 or 300 A.D. So it's in the neighborhood of 200 years after this happened. And that's what he recorded, that there was not one Christian that died in Jerusalem. When the army surrounded Jerusalem, all of the Christians got out and they ran to the mountains, and he said that they went to Pella. So we'll look and see where this Pella is. Here, of course, is Jerusalem, and they went east across the Jordan River, and then that's the area known as Perea, which was the place that Jesus was not immediately before, but the place that he did most of his ministry right before he was crucified. And this is the very place that Jesus was when he was notified that Lazarus had died. And that's when he left this Perean region and went and raised Lazarus from the dead. And then from there, he went on to Samaria. Okay, so, but these Christians went east, crossed the Jordan, went north, and up here, just north of this Perean, which is, and now Perea was a Jewish area, a part of the Israelite nation. It wasn't Gentile. But they left that land and went to Pella, which was Gentile territory. And just to see where this is. It's south of the Sea of Galilee. And here is Gergesa, the Gadarenes, the Gergesenes, that is talked about in Matthew and Luke's account of when Jesus went across the Sea of Galilee and cast out the demons known as Legion. And so they were south of there, about 15 miles south of where Jesus cast out the demons Legion and cast them, sent them into those swine. And but just north of Perea. And so Jesus told them to flee to the mountains. And I have looked at this area on the internet, and what showed on the internet is it's just all these hills and mountains. And now I don't guess they're real, maybe not real huge. I couldn't really tell the perspective because I think this was an airplane that took a picture. But it was just miles and miles as far as the eye could see were these mountains. So that's quite a terrain. And they are showing this on this map. All in here of mountains, and it's all desolate. There was at least modern day. Now, 2,000 years ago, maybe they might have had some grass and some vegetation growing, but the picture that I saw of this area, it was just like a desert. It was just mountains. I didn't see any green as far as the eye could see. So I don't know what animals lived there. So what came to my mind is this was a very perilous time for these Christians. I don't know how they got their food. God obviously provided, but Jesus even told them that this was going to be very rough in tough times. And I can see from the terrain that they ended up going to, according to Eusebius. Because this is a very wild wilderness, deserty type area. Okay. So we'll continue with verse 21. So this is where Jesus says, "Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her." So, Jesus is saying, get out of Jerusalem, run to the mountains, and Eusebius says they go to Pella, and don't let those that are in the midst of her depart, and let not those, let those who are in the middle of Jerusalem depart. So, get out of Jerusalem, and don't let those that are in the countryside come back into Jerusalem. So, he's saying, warn the people as you leave, or whoever you meet that's not in Jerusalem, you tell them, do not go to Jerusalem, because it's going to be utterly destroyed. And verse 22, "For these are the days of the vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled." So, these are the days of vengeance. Now, what kind of vengeance is this? Well, Jesus just had told them a day or two before to the Pharisees and the chief priests, this was because the Israelites would end up rejecting not only him, but rejecting God's kingdom. And so that God sent this army, and Jesus refers to this as the days of vengeance. Okay, Kaufman's comment on these two verses are about fleeing to the mountains. History records that no Christian lost his life in the incredible devastation that overtook Jerusalem. The certainty that they did escape being the only authentication of Jesus' prophecy that is necessary. And now he continues, Eusebius tells how. And this is a quote from the book that Eusebius wrote, his history book. "The Christians fled to Pella, a town in Transjordan," which that means across the Jordan. The Bible generally refers to this Perean area as across the Jordan, but Eusebius called it Transjordan, but that just means a cross on the other side. So it's on the east side, opposite of where Jerusalem was. And they went to a town to the south of the Sea of Galilee. And so that's this Pella. And Pella was one of the Greek towns of the Decapolis. And there the Christians remained free from the Roman warfare and Jewish persecution. So, and this Decapolis, deca means 10. So this was a province with 10 Gentile cities, is what made up this Decapolis. And Pella is one of these. Okay, and now on the comment of these are the days of vengeance. At last, as Jesus said, all of the righteous bloodshed on earth from the blood of Abel to the very time Jesus spoke was coming upon the doomed city. Their greatest sin of all was in rejecting God's Son and His kingdom. And the penalty of that last act of rebellion was summarily executed upon Israel in the total destruction of their city. Okay. Verse 23. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. So, even for the Christians, it was going to be a perilous journey. And what it looked like from what I saw in the terrain is just not a lot of food in that area, being very desolate. And so this would be, of course, hard on nursing mothers for sure to get enough food, not only to sustain their body, but the child's body and produce enough milk. And so Kaufman's comment on this is, these touches depict the horror of a nation scattered by God's wrath. The siege would work particular hardship upon the pregnant women and those with babies still nursing. There is no reasonable doubt either that Jesus uttered this prophecy or that it came to pass as he said. So there is no doubt that this actually happened just as Jesus said it would. Here indeed was the prophet like unto Moses. So this is what Moses prophesied to the Israelites back in Exodus. And he told them that God will raise up a prophet like me from among your people. So the Israelite nation, sometime in the future, to Moses, God would raise up a prophet that would be like Moses. And then Moses told them, you need to listen to him. Which, unfortunately, for the most part, they did, or that definitely the leadership of the Israelites did not heed that command that warning that Moses gave them, that they needed to listen to this prophet that God would raise up from among the Israelite nation, which actually came through the blood of Judah, through the line of Judah. Okay, verse 24. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So what Jesus is saying here is that Jerusalem will be trampled or occupied by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Well, what time is that? Obviously, that is the end of time. Kaufman has written a little over a page on this that I'll read. But that these times of the Gentiles is a long period of time. So far, it's been 2,000 years. And we don't know how much longer that is going to be. That's for under God's control, not our control. And but it started at the destruction of Jerusalem, and it will end at the end of time. And so what Jesus is saying here is that Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the end of time. Who's trampling or occupying Jerusalem today? Well, several different people. Now, Jews are there in Jerusalem, but ultimately it is mostly occupied by the Muslims, and they even control the most valued territory, which is where the temple was and the Temple Mount. And the Muslims now have this Muslim mosque there that they call the Dome of the Rock. And so they are occupying Jerusalem in this age, which Kaufman writes all different types of people that I'll read here in a little bit, that there's been many different types of people and nations, Gentiles, different types of Gentiles that have occupied Jerusalem in the last 2,000 years. Okay, but as far as fall by the edge of the sword, Josephus gives the names of the tribes and villages with the numbers to put that were put to death, arriving at the horrific total of 1.1 million. And as Josephus was a Jewish historian, his record must be received as the most reliable that has reached us concerning this disaster. So Josephus recorded that 1.1 million Jews were slaughtered in this destruction that the Romans did to Jerusalem. And from what I've understood, Josephus was an eyewitness to this, and he was actually right there during this destruction. And so, anyway, Kaufman said that he's the most reliable historian source that we have concerning this disaster. And as far as being the Israelites now being led captive into all nations, Titus alone deported some 100,000 Jews at one time, and the scattering of Israel, as Jesus often promised, was most thoroughly accomplished. So Jesus, more than this time, talked about that the Israelite nation would be scattered across the world. And we've even seen that in history even since, about the Jews have been scattered different places, forced to leave. I guess maybe the most recent that we can think of was the scattering that happened during World War II, and maybe before World War II. And the Jews, either they left Germany or they were taken to the death camps. Okay, as far as being trodden, Jerusalem being trodden down of the Gentiles, Kaufman said that means occupied by the Gentiles. They did not tread down the city during the siege, nor as they devastated it, but as the Gentiles have occupied Jerusalem now for 20 centuries. So Gentiles have been in control and occupied Jerusalem for 2,000 years, ever since this destruction. Now about the times of the Gentiles, because Jesus says that the Gentiles will trample Jerusalem until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Kaufman's comments on this: that the times of the Gentiles is here named as the period of time during which the Jerusalem would be subject to Gentile domination. It is far easier for Christians now to know what this meant than for the apostles who first heard it. The historian record of that period is spread upon the chronicles of nearly 2,000 years. So Kaufman said we can get a much better idea for this time period, that is going to be a long time period that that Gentiles would rule or dominate or occupy Jerusalem. Whereas the apostles, there was no way that they could comprehend that for 2,000 years, until the end of time, the Jews, the Israelites, would never be in control of Jerusalem ever again. And but Kaufman's comment here is we can better have a better understanding, because we've seen it. They haven't been in control since Jerusalem was destroyed. And but they would have had a very hard time comprehending that. The proper understanding of the times of the Gentiles must take into account the following, and he has three things. First, the fact that at least 2,000 years were clearly a part of the period indicated, that much time having already elapsed. The fact that these words are to be understood, this is part two, as the opposite of the season of Jerusalem. The times of the Gentiles will be contrasted to the times during which Jerusalem held the favored position. So it would have been known as the times of the Israelites, 70 AD and before, but from 70 AD until the end of time is known as the times of the Gentiles. And then the third point that Kaufman says we must take into account, the fact that the Apostle Paul used a very similar term in Romans, the fulfillment of the Gentiles, that's what Paul referred to this as instead of the times of the Gentiles. He says the fullness of the Gentiles, and prophesied that Jewish hardening would continue until that period was concluded. So to the end of time, Paul said that the Jews would continue to harden their hearts. And we've seen that today, that that has continued to happen. They still keep doubling down that Jesus was not the Messiah, and they're still looking for the Messiah and still waiting. And so this is, we're seeing this Jewish hardening still 2,000 years even later. And Paul said that that would happen until the end of time, until the fullness of the Gentiles. In the light of the above considerations, the true meaning of the times of the Gentiles would appear to be as expressed this way. The interval between the fall of Jerusalem and the end of the age, the end of time, is called the times of the Gentiles, during which the gospel is announced to the Gentiles and the vineyard is given to others than the Jews, as Jesus stated in the parable of the unjust stewards. So they were given to other, to Gentiles, given to non-Jews, since unfortunately the Israelites refused to respond. To the Jews, God granted a time of privilege and gracious opportunity. Near the close of that time, the Son of Man wept over Jerusalem. In like manner, the Gentile nations are now having their times, which in due course are to be fulfilled, as was the case with Jerusalem. The times of the Gentiles signify the whole period of time which must elapse between the destruction of Jerusalem and the beginning of the times of the end when the Lord will return. In other words, these denote the period during which the Gentiles hold God's kingdom instead of the Jews. There is not much disagreement among the commentators that the times of the Gentiles represents a very long period of time, but there are many radically divergent views on how those times will be terminated. Jesus nowhere implies that the times of the Gentiles will be followed by Jewish dominion over the nations. The kingdom of this world is to give place to the heavenly kingdom of our Lord. So what what Kaufman is stating here is this false thought of the Jews and Jesus reigning in Jerusalem for 1,000 years is a false concept. That's what he just said in that last paragraph. Then he continues on another paragraph. Furthermore, the times of the Jews did not mean their full conversion, and neither will the times of the Gentiles mean the Gentiles' full conversion, but just the opposite. The times of the Gentiles means the period when Gentiles are being saved, and there's a powerful inference in that text that just as Israel finally rebelled completely against the Lord, so will the Gentiles, bringing on the time of the end, which this reflects back to what Dad always told us all through the years, that what his thought of is when God would end all creation would be when there was not enough righteous on earth for God to be able to sustain the creation. And the two examples that Dad always gave, that Dad said, well, we can just look back and see where God totally destroyed in the past and what was the condition there. They didn't have enough righteous. It was in the days of Noah. There were not enough righteous. There were only 8 that decided to get on the ark. And so only 8 souls were righteous. And so they only had a few, and God destroyed the earth in that time. And then in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, those two big cities, thriving cities, they only had the three. It was just Lot and his two daughters. The wife wasn't even righteous enough, so she got turned to a pillar of salt. So anyway, Kaufman is alluding to that he figured that the end of time will also be when the Gentiles rebel and there are not enough righteous for God to sustain the existence of creation. Okay, so now he ends this section with the different groups of people that have dominated Jerusalem in the 2,000 years since. He says, today, after 20 centuries of Gentiles ruling over Jerusalem, during which the Romans, the Franks, the Mamelukes, the Turks, the British have all in turn held their authority over Jerusalem, and today the city or the Temple Mount is controlled by the Muslims. So, where we will plan to begin next week is Jesus then turns, since he's talking about when the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled, which obviously that is a reference to the end of time, then he tells about what the end of time will look like, what his second coming will look like, and that will be the next of four verses. So we'll plan to cover that, Lord willing, next week.